Today's Shi'ez Masechta Chulin Daf Yud Dalet. We will begin on Daf Yud Dalet. I'm at Aleph at the Mishnah. It says the Mishnah, as Shartet B'Shabbos Yom Kippurim Samri Shechs on Shabbos or Yom Kippur Alpi Shemeschai B'Nafshai, even though he's done an Aveira for which there is a Chiyiv Misa, we know if somebody's Mechal Shabbos, there's a Chiyiv Skiwa. If somebody's Mechal Yom Kippur, there's a Chiyiv Koris. Still, Shchitas Ekshera, the Shchit is considered a valid Shchita. The Rishonim asked the question that we've learned earlier in our Masechta that someone who is a Mumer is disqualified from being a Shochet. And certainly, someone who is a Mechal Shabbos is a Mumer. And therefore they ask, how could this Shchita be considered a valid Shchita? And there are many answers given by the Rishonim. The Rambam says that it's referring to an individual who shechted on Shabbos b'shoigig. The halacha that someone is a mumer is only if he did the avera b'mezid. Here he shechted b'shoigig, and therefore he's not considered a mumer. Tosfos answers that either to be considered a mumer, you will have to have done the avera a number of times, and the individual we're discussing only shechted on Shabbos once. Or another Torah Tosfos suggests is that to be considered a Mumer L'Chal Shabbos is only a Mumer if he was Mechal Shabbos B'Faresia, in public. And the person that's being discussed in our Mishnah was Mechal Shabbos, but it was Mechal Shabbos B'Tzina privately, not B'Faresia. The Shor HaMetzion B'Halacha actually asks, quotes Achronim, who discuss how are we to understand these two answers that Tosfos offered. Does Tosfos mean to say that if you shecht, only if you shecht a number of times, are you considered a mumer? And furthermore, only if you shecht b'faresia, are you considered a mumer? Or is Tosfos to be understood that if somebody shechts, if somebody's mechal shabbos b'faresia, then automatically he's considered a mumer, even if he did it once? And then there's another halacha, that even if you didn't do it publicly, but if you did it a number of times, then you're considered a Mechal Shabbos. Another terrorist that the Rishonim suggest is as follows. This person, and it's not only in this situation, but when a person shechts, so actually at the beginning of his Shechita, it's not really considered Chil Shabbos. Why? Because it's really just makalkal, he's just killing an animal. Only when he completes the shechita is he considered that he was mechal Shabbos. So since at the beginning of this act, it's not considered an act of tikkun, so it's not your regular case of chil Shabbos where somebody would become considered a mumer for doing this. And actually this concept that Rishonim Duran suggests is used by Mefarshim to ask another question. We've quoted in our Shiurim the Gemara Masechta Temura, a famous Machloikis Abaye in Rava in Masechta Temura, if Kamil Sdom Rachmana Loi Savid, anything the Torah says should not be done, he ovid if the person does it, if a person does it, Mahani, is it any way effective Loi Mahani? The opinion of Abaye is, that's Mahani, it's effective anyway. And the opinion of Rav is that it's Loi Mahani, that it's not effective. And the Mefarshim therefore ask, if, as Rav teaches us, that anything that is not allowed to be done, even if it is done, Loi Mahani, it's not considered effective, so certainly one is not supposed to shecht on Shabbos. And therefore the question is, if one did shecht on Shabbos, why is his act considered a halachically valid act? But if we follow the concept that the Ran just taught us, that this is not your regular situation, because every Shechit on Shabbos begins as an act of kilkel, only afterwards does it turn into an act of tikkun. So it's not your regular situation, and therefore here, the halacha perhaps would be that the din would be, here the halacha would be that everybody would agree that he ovid mihani. There are other terutzim given to this question. One terutz that's given is only where does the Torah say Ovid Loi Mahani? Is if it's something that is always not acceptable. Just to give an example, because that's where the primary sugya of Kamos Da'om Rachmona Loi Sabdi Ovid Mahani, Ovid Loi Mahani is. It's a Masechta Temura. The Pasuk we know teaches us Lo Yimirenu, that one should not substitute one animal, one carbon for another carbon. So the Torah says, V'haya, if somebody does, V'haya hu m'sarasi ha-kaydish, both the original animal and the substitute become kaydish. So there, we're referring to a situation where it's always also to make a tamura. Since it's always also to make a tamura, if not that the Torah teaches us Rava, said that here, even though it's something that shouldn't be done, it's considered that it accomplishes something, it wouldn't accomplish. Shechita is only an Isser on Shabbos, on Yom Kippur, but the rest of the week, certainly Shechita is not Asur. And therefore, since it's not a case where it's always Asur, we don't apply the concept Kamus Da'am Rachmana Loi Savidi Ovid Loi Mahani. Another teretz that the Mepharshim suggest is again using the case of Temura as our prototype. In the case of Temura, if the Torah indeed would tell us that the act of substitution is not halakhically valid, then something would have been accomplished because the Aveira, we would have been saved, so to speak, from the Aveira, because he did this Aveira of Temura. But the Torah, by telling us that what he did has no halakhic meaning, saved this person from doing an Aveira. In the case of Shechita, by saying that the Shechita won't be a valid Shechita, that doesn't change the reality that the person shechted and that the animal is slaughtered. So therefore there's no purpose in saying Yavid Mahani, Yavid Loi Mahani. Along the same lines, the Mepharshim explained we only apply this concept when what's done is inherently not correct, but where what's done is only usur because of the time, Shabbos, it's Yom Kippur, there we don't say the concept of Ovid Mahani, the Ovid Loi Mahani. Furthermore, the Mepharshim ask that even if, as we're saying, there is no issue with the Shechita, or that we're saying that the Shechita is considered a valid Shechita, but there's still a problem. We know that after an animal is slaughtered, there has to be Melicha to take out the blood. And what happened with that in our Mishnah? So some explain that our Mishnah is referring to a situation where everything was done improperly. That he shechted on Shabbos, and not only did they shecht on Shabbos, but they even did the Malich on Shabbos. And now the question is, what is the status of this Shechita and Malicha? That's one approach the Rishonim suggest. Another approach that the Rishonim suggest is that the only time the Torah teaches us that Malicha, the rice, is required, is if someone wants to cook the meat. So if somebody wants to cook the meat, you're not allowed to cook meat that wasn't salted to have the blood taken out. But in a case such as our Mishnah, where the blood is being, where the meat will not be cooked, it will be eaten raw, we're going to be discussing eating raw meat in our sugyas, there is no chiyuv melicha midaraisa. Says the Gemara. Amar Huna, Dorish Chiya Barav Mishmei Derav, Asur Bachilul Yoyma. Even though our Mishnah has taught us that the Shechita that's done on Shabbos and Yom Kippur is a valid Shechita, that meat may not be eaten on that day. And as Rashi explains, as the Gemara is going to say this explicitly in our coming Shiurim, is that since our Mishnah speaks about Shabbos and Yom Kippur, and certainly if the Shechita was done on Yom Kippur, one would not be allowed to eat the meat, even if it's a kosher Shechita, because you're not allowed to eat on Yom Kippur, the Mishnah is saying the same din will apply to Shabbos. Others say, other Rishonim take this even a step further. Because if you think about it, Shabbos, Chil Shabbos, is a more severe Aveira than Chil Yom Kippur. For Chil Shabbos is a Chiyuv Skila, for Chil Yom Kippur there isn't. So if our Mishnah is teaching us that the Shechita on Shabbos is considered a kosher Shechita, certainly the Shechita Yom Kippur ought to be considered a valid Shechita. Why did our Mishnah have to also mention the case of Yom Kippur? So the answer is, because specifically, the Mishnah is trying to teach us that even though the Shechita was done on Shabbos, and even though our Mishnah is teaching us that that Shechita is a kosher Shechita, the halacha is, the meat can't be eaten till after Shabbos, after Yom Kippur. V'nazmin chaverin l'meimer, and our colleagues in explaining Rav's opinion said, Rav Yehuda hi, that who is the Tana of our Mishnah? The Tana of our Mishnah is Rav Yehuda. In other words, once Rav has said that one may not eat the meat that was slaughtered on Shabbos and Yom Kippur, why did he say this? Because he was obviously following the opinion of a certain halachic opinion. Says our Gemara, what was the halachic opinion that was being followed? The halachic opinion that was being followed was the opinion of Rabbi Yehuda. And obviously, therefore, asked the Gemara, hi Rabbi Yehuda, which opinion of Rabbi Yehuda is being followed here that is the basis for the psak that the meat that was slaughtered on Shabbos may not be eaten? Amar Abba, Rabbi Yehuda dachonahi. It represents the opinion of Rabbi Yehuda regarding Muksa. And as the Rishonim have framed the Gemara, we're going to be discussing Hilchas Muksa for a little while now. There certainly is a concept throughout Shas, throughout Halacha, concept of Muksa. But there is a Machlokes Tanoim, Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Shimon, how far to apply this concept. And Rabbi Yehuda has a stricter application of Muksa than Rav Yehuda. And the Gemara, the Rav Shimon, Rabbi Yehuda is stricter than Rav Shimon. And now Rav Abba is suggesting that the opinion of our Mishnah reflects Rabbi Yehuda's position regarding Muksa. The Tanan, the Mishnah teaches us in Masechta Shabbos, Mechatchen es hadalun lefnei behema. We're allowed to cut up vegetables, cucumbers, in front of animals. Machloikas Rishonim, how to understand this case. Rashi explains that it's referring to cucumbers that are detached, and he's saying if they were attached, then obviously one would be usher to detach them on Shabbos, because this is an Issa Talisha, which is Issa Daraisa. But here we're referring to a situation where these cucumbers are now detached. And even though they were attached before Shabbos, but now the cucumbers that we're referring to are detached, and the Tanakhama, as we're going to see, is going to teach us that they're not muksa. Tosfos goes on to explain that even though at the beginning of Shabbos they were attached, but they became detached on Shabbos, the Tanakhama is going to hold that there is no Isser. Neither an Isser of Shema Yitlosh. There's no Isser that Chazal were concerned that we're going to let you eat these vegetables. You may come to detached, deliberately, vegetables on Shabbos. Nor is there an Isser, according to the Tanakhama, there is no Muksa. And there, as we're going to explain. Furthermore, the opinion of the Tanakhama is as Nevela Fnei Kalavim, that if an animal died on Shabbos, so even though that animal wasn't set aside to be eaten as animal food, as dog food on Shabbos, because before Shabbos it was alive, the Mishnah is teaching us, according to the Tanakhama, that the halacha is that it's not usur because of muksa. And there's a machloikis in Masechta Beya, how to understand the opinion of the Tanakhama regarding the Vela. One opinion is, because he holds that there is no issa muksa, that even if the animal was a healthy animal before Shabbos, and there was no expectation that this animal is going to die on Shabbos and therefore become dog food, it makes no difference. He doesn't subscribe to the concept of muksa. That's my operator of Yosef's understanding of the Tanakhama in the Masechta Beya. Rava takes a stricter interpretation of the opinion of the Tanakhama, and he says that it's referring to a situation where the animal was musukenes, it was sick before Shabbos, and the person assumed that this animal is going to die on Shabbos, and therefore it's considered mukhan, it's considered prepared, it's not considered muksa on Shabbos. Rabbi Yehuda Omer, Rabbi Yehuda disagrees. And he says, Im loy hoysen nevela mer Shabbos, if the animal wasn't an nevela before Shabbos, then asura. It's asur. Why? Lefish enem ne mukhan. Rabbi Yehuda's opinion is that since an animal is alive before Shabbos, so while it was alive, it's understood to be mukhan adam, that's ultimately going to be used for human purposes. Since it's going to be used for human purposes, that when it dies on Shabbos and it becomes dog food, it's muksa, it wasn't set aside for human purposes. It's not considered minamuchen, and therefore there's no problem. The Rishonim asked the question that even if it's not muksa, why is there no issue of muksa machmas iser? So the Rishonim answer that the issue of muksa machmas iser is only applicable when the person did a maisa iser. And here, the person didn't do a maisa iser, the animal died by itself, and therefore it's not considered muksa machmas iser. Amma, but what's relevant to our Gemara, what do we see? Kivin delay iskim esma. Rabbi Yehuda's opinion is that anything that wasn't properly prepared before Shabbos is muksa. And therefore, since this food wasn't prepared before Shabbos to be used as dog food, it falls into the category of muksa. Hachinami, in our mission as well, when you have a live animal, kivin delay iskim esma, since it wasn't prepared from before Shabbos, Asura, the animal, falls into the category of muksa, and therefore, even if it was properly slaughtered on Shabbos, it would still remain muksa that you could not eat. Of course, the Mefarshim asked the question, so if so, the Tanakama, who is lenient, how will he understand this case that you're allowed to serve the nevela lefnei klavim, where it clearly was set aside because it was a live animal that you can't serve? So some Rishonim explained that this person had in his home a cheresh shayt of a cotton, as the Chazon Ish explains, who had the tendency of shechting, and therefore he had the assumption that it would be slaughtered on Shabbos, and therefore it's not considered that he set it aside. Amalei Abaya, so asks Abaya, Mi Dami, how can we compare the two cases? Hosam, in the case of the Nevela on Shabbos, Mikara Muchan La'adam, originally it was an animal that was set aside, it was a good animal that was going to be used for human consumption. The Hashta, Muchan La'klavim. And now, it's because it died and it's a Nevela, it's animal food. And as we're going to learn in our Shiurim, a very important type of muksa according to Yehuda is noilin, something that came into a new situation. This is an example of noilin, because before Shabbos it was animal food, it was human food, and at Shabbos it became animal food, and that's considered noilin. Hacha, whereas in our case, in our Mishnah, mikara mukhan la'adam, it was originally set aside for human consumption, the hashta mukhaladim, and now it's still human consumption, and therefore it ought not to be treated the same way. Answers Rababa, Mi savat behema b'chayel achilo medes. What makes you say that an animal, while it's alive, is set aside for human consumption, and therefore you're saying that nothing changed from before Shabbos to during Shabbos? That isn't correct. Behema b'chayel gadlo medes. Animals are made for breeding. So before Shabbos, it was set aside for breeding, and on Shabbos, it became human food, and therefore it's considered noilad, it's considered a new situation here. Ask the Gemara, if we're saying that any animal that's slaughtered become and now becomes food is in the category of noilad, meaning that until now it was set aside for breeding, and now it's set aside for food, and therefore now that became food, it's in a category of noilad. So then ask the Gemara, Behemel Rabbi Yehuda, Hechi Shaftinan. We know that the halach is that on Yontif, you're allowed to shecht an animal. But the question is, why would you be allowed to shecht an animal on Yontif? On Yontif, we also have muksa. Actually, as we learned in Masech Debeya, there may be a stricter interpretation of muksa on Yontif than there is on Shabbos. So on Yontif, when you start before Yontif, where, as the Gemara is explaining now, it was designated as for breeding. And now when you slaughter it on Yontif, it becomes food. Why is it not muksa? And should be also to be eaten on Yontif? Yet we know that Allah is, one may shecht an animal in Yontif and eat it. Amaloi. So therefore, if Abba responds, a medes l'chil v'medes l'gadol. An animal has two purposes. It can be used for eating, and it can be used for breeding. So when you shecht the animal on Yontif, nishata, when you shecht it on Yontif, which is a permitted act, hovera d'l'chil v'medes. We have here the concept of breira. Breira teaches us retroactive designation, and retroactively we now see that this animal was always here for consumption. And since it was always here for consumption, we don't have a problem of muksa. Loi nishkata, if it isn't slaughtered on Yontif, hovera, it becomes obvious d'l'gadol v'medes that it was here for breeding, and therefore if it dies in Yontif, it would be muksa. This applies in Yontif, where before Yontif, it could have been, we don't know what will happen with it on Yontif. When, however, we're talking about Shabbos, by Shabbos, there's no permissible possibility, to shecht an animal on Shabbos. The meat is considered muksa. Why is the meat considered muksa? We can't assume that at the beginning of Shabbos, the person designated the animal to shecht it, because as we said before, you're not allowed to shecht on Shabbos. We say that at the beginning of Shabbos, the animal was clearly in the category of medes l'gadol. It was here for breeding. And since it was here for breeding, on Shabbos, when you shecht it, it's a situation of muksa that it transferred from being l'gadol to lechem. But what have we said here? What we said here is that the reason an animal is considered on Yontif, you're allowed to shecht, is because it relies on the concept of breira. But ask the Gemara, for less than Lebihu the breira. This concept of breira, of do we say retroactive designation, is a question throughout halacha, if we say breira. And the question is, here we're assuming that Lebihu says breira. That's what we're saying, you're allowed to shecht on Yontif. Where do we see in halacha? We'll see now that Rabbi Yehuda actually doesn't hold of the concept of breira. The Gemara goes on now to explain where we see Rabbi Yehuda doesn't subscribe to the concept of breira. Menolam, inayim midatanya, halakeach yayin ben akuter. Somebody purchases wine from the kuter, and as the Mefarshim explain our Gemara, actually we know the kutim are a nation that inhabited the land of Eretz Yisrael, and became Gerim out of fear of the lions. And throughout Shas, there's a question if the Kutim are considered Geri Emes or Geri Arayas. Are they considered true Gerim or not? It is the opinion of Rameya that certainly at the beginning they were considered Geri Emes, they were considered full-fledged Gerim. Only later on did they discover that they were Oivdei Avodah Zarah, as we've learned in our Masechta, and disqualified their status as Jews. But since they were considered Gerim, they were considered Jews, the halacha is that if one purchases produce from a Jew, who we are concerned did not take off Trumas and Maestras, one has to take off their own Trumas and Maestras. And furthermore, explain the Mefarshim, as we have been learning in our Masechta, the Kutim were not concerned about feeding someone product that isn't kosher. Because their definition of lifnei evil esite michshol is not as we interpret it, that one may not cause someone else to do an aveira. Rather, their interpretation is lifnei evil esite michshol, don't put a stumbling block. So if they're selling produce to someone else, they're not concerned that it wasn't properly, the proper trumas and maizes weren't taken off. And as Mepharshim go on to explain, even though halacha we've learned is that if somebody buys produce from an Amoritz, there's a din of demai. That din doesn't apply when one buys it from a kuti, because a kuti we have a higher level of certainty that they didn't take off the proper trumas and maizes. Furthermore, we know the halacha is that one may not remove trumas and maizes on Shabbos. It's a question of tikkun. It's an issue of making the food edible. And therefore, Shabbos and Yom Tov, one may not take off trumas and maizes. And the situation that the Braisa that we're about to learn discusses is a situation where some Rishonim explained it's right before Shabbos. One has this barrel of wine that he's buying from the Kutim, and again, in line with the way we're explaining, even though we explained in the previous year that the wine of the Kutim is Asur, here, as I said, we're referring to the situation before, they were declared to be in that category of Ovdei Avodah Zarah, and therefore the wine is not Asur. And if one takes off, one is now buying wine from a Kuti, where there's a real concern that Trumas and Maisers were not removed, and it's right before Shabbos, and we're not going to be able to take off the Trumas and Maisris. So our Mishnah says, the Braisa will give us an advice what to do. Other Rishonim say that it's referring to a situation where it's Bein HaShmoshes. Where Bein HaShmoshes of Friday evening is not on one hand considered like Shabbos, where any act of Afrosha Trumas and Maisris is prohibited, but it's not like a weekday where any type of Afrosha is permitted. The hafrosha that will be described is the only option. And there are other Rishonim that explain that the first situation being discussed is that it's on Shabbos itself. And even though, as we said a moment ago, an actual Maisa hafrosha is also on Shabbos, the type of hafrosha that's going to be discussed here is permitted. So says the Braisa, Alokeach Yayim ben Akutim, if somebody purchases wine from the Kutim, he purchased 100 gallons of wine. Omer, he says, Shnei Lugim Shani Asa Lahafrish, 2 gallons will be considered Truma. As we know, the share of Truma is either a 40th, a 50th, or a 60th. Here we're assuming it's a 50th, so it's 2 gallons. A Sarah Maiserishin, the next 10 gallons should be Maiserishin. Tisha Maiserishini, and the next 9 gallons should be Maiserishini. Of course, the Rishonim point out that it seems that the numbers that are being indicated in this braisa are not really accurate, because the number is really, if we start with 100 and we take off 2 gallons for truma, so we're left with 98. If we take off 10% of 98, it's not 10, it's really 9.8. And if we look at the remainder is not really 9, the remainder is less. Just that the Braisa is using round numbers. That's one approach in the Rishonim. Another approach in the Rishonim actually is that we didn't start with 100 gallons of wine. We started with 102 gallons of wine. And we take off 2 gallons of Truma, even though it's actually less than a 50th. But we know that the halacha is that Midaraisa Chita Achas Vateres is a creed. The number of a 50th is not a hard and fast number when it comes to taking off truma. So he took off a little less than 50th. Now he's left with 100 gallons. 10 gallons will be the Maaser Rishon. 9 gallons will be the Maaser Sheni. A third approach that I saw in the Rishonim how to resolve this issue is that they suggest that it's referring to a situation where it person took this truma. There's really the person, we all know for sure that the kuti did not take off truma semaisris. We have a strong reason to be concerned, as I explained, but we can't really be certain. given that we don't know this for certainty, we have to be machmer on all situations. And just to explain, on one hand, we have to assume that he didn't take off truma, and therefore 2 gallons should be taken off as truma. On the other hand, we need to be concerned that perhaps indeed he did take off truma. And if he took off truma, then but he didn't take off meiser, then the proper amount that should be taken from meiser is 10 gallons. And therefore we have to be machmer on both sides. Continues the Braisa, Umeichel and Vishay Simiyad. Here too there's Machlokas Vishayim how to define this statement. Rashi says that the last 9 gallons were identified as Maisa Sheni. And of course we never want to rely on this type of afrosha if we could avoid relying on this type of afrosha. So here we should not do this type of afrosha if we could be poida, the Maisa Sheni could be redeemed. Tosfos disagrees. Tosfos says that the word mechel here is not to be understood as redeemed. Well, mechel v'shosh v'yad, you could drink right away. Divrei Ramei, that's the opinion of Ramei. Yehuda Reb Yosef Reb Shimon Oisrim, because they obviously rely on this type of situation, is with a person designated within the barrel of wine that this much gallons are truma and this much maaserishin, and then after Shabbos retroactively, the wine that will be taken out as the truma wine will have been determined to be the truma wine, and the wine that will be taken out as the maaser wine will have been determined to be Mice wine, and they're saying we're not relying on Breira. So isn't this a clear indication that Yehuda doesn't subscribe to Breira? Answers the Gemara Hossam, the reason over there where they're not satisfied is not because of Breira. The reason is a different reason altogether. The reason is Kritani Tama, Amalhem Rameya, I Atamoy the Shem Yibaka Hanoid. Are you not concerned that the barrel will be broken? The entire effectiveness of this approach is that after Shabbos we'll take out the gallons for truma for meiser. But if on Shabbos the barrel breaks and all of the wine spills out, it will have turned out that the person drank tevel. The nitsa shows it following mafreya. So as they're saying, it has nothing to do with breira. It has to do with this concern. And Rabbi Meir responds, likashir baka. I'm not worried that a barrel will break, and therefore it's considered a valid approach what to do under these circumstances. So at this point, this is not a proof that Rabbi Yehuda doesn't subscribe to Breira. So Gemara attempts a different proof. Element of Tani Ayon. On HaShabbos, the halacha is that one may now walk past the Tchum, which means a person's entire city that he's in is considered Dalet Amos. And outside of your city, you're allowed to walk 2,000 amos in any direction. But let's say a person wants to walk 4,000 amos in one direction. So what he does is he puts down an Erev Tchumim, 2,000 amos outside of his city. And what that accomplishes is that his place of residence, Friday afternoon, Bein Hashmoshes, is not within his city, but rather his place of residence is where his Erev is. And now he can walk 2,000 amos from there in either direction. The city doesn't become the focal point, but rather the Erev is. And what essentially happens is, let's say he puts the Erev down to the east side, he can walk 4,000 amos towards the east, won't be able to walk any amount of amos to the west, outside of the city. The Bryce over here discusses two different situations. One situation is where there's a Talmud Chacham coming to town, but the person isn't quite certain if he's coming to the east side or he's coming to the west side. And therefore, he puts down 2 Erevs, one on the east side and one on the west side, because he wants to go to the lecture of this Talmud Chacham. And he says, if it turns out the Talmud Chacham is on the east side, so my Erev on the east side should be effective. If the Talmud Chacham is on the west side, the Erev to the west side should be effective. That's one situation where Rabbi Yehuda says we could rely that it is acceptable. But then Rabbi Yehuda discusses a different situation where the person, there are 2 Talmidei Chachamim. One is on the east side and one is on the west side. And he's not quite sure which shear, they're both giving drushes, but he's not quite sure which lecture he wants to attend. In that case, he puts down two Erefs, and again he says, on Shabbos I'll decide which lecture I want to attend, and that Erev should be the effective Erev. There the Halacha, Rabbi Yehuda says, is it wouldn't be acceptable. The Tanei Aya, Rabbi Yehuda Omer, Ein Adam Mas Na Shnei Dvarim Ke'echad. A person can't make a condition of two things at the same time. Ela, in Ba Chacham LeMizrach, Eruv LeMizrach. In the first case that I described, where he's not sure if the Tam Chacham, the Rav is on the east side or the west side, it's acceptable. V'ilu L'kan L'kan. But in the second case, where there are going to be two Tamid Chachamim, and I want to be able to choose on Shabbos which year I want to attend, and therefore which Erev should be the valid Erev, loy, it's not halachically acceptable. V'avinimbo. And we try to understand, why is there a difference in halacha between these two cases? Ma'ishna L'kan L'kan D'loy. Why in the case where there are two Talmid Chachamim from the two directions, and I'm just choosing on Shabbos which Erev should be the valid Erev, it's not acceptable. Da'im Breira. Because that requires a retroactive designation. And a retroactive designation is not halachically acceptable. So ask the Gemara, Mizrach U'Ma'ariv, Nami'im Breira. So then, in the first case, where I just don't know which direction the Talmid Chachamim is coming, we should also say that it shouldn't be effective because of Breira. V'omer Rabbi Yochanan. So Rabbi Yochanan, in answering this difficulty, said, V'kvah bo Chacham. In the case where we don't know if the Talmid Chacham came to the east side and the west side, the Talmid Chacham was already there, Ben Hashemashes. I didn't know where he was, and therefore it doesn't require retroactive designation. And as the Mefarshim explained, there are a number of concepts in Halacha that we have to sort of keep separate in order to understand our Gemara. There's a concept of Breira, which speaks about retroactive designation. There's a concept of Igloi Milsla Mafreya, which is just telling us something that was there, but I just didn't know that. And then there's a concept of Tanai. Our Gemara is teaching us that the Igloi Milsla Mafreya and Breira are two different concepts. And therefore, in the case where the Talmud Chacham was already there Friday afternoon, it was just, I didn't know, was the Talmud Chacham on the east side or on the west side. That is a category of a Glor Muslim Afreya that everybody subscribes to. But in the case where I want to have the ability on Shabbos to choose which Erev should be effective, that involves Breira. That involves retroactive designation. And that isn't acceptable. Of course, the Mefarshim ask that we know that the Rishonim already asked this question, that we know throughout Halacha there's a concept of Tanai, that one can make a stipulation. And why isn't Tanai a contradiction to Breira? So some Rishonim say that a Tanai is when something is in my control. I make a stipulation that this, if this will be, then this will be. If not, not. So it's in my control. Here, Breira is where it's not in my control. The example of our Gemara is a great example where it's not, it depends on the Talmid Chacham, which side he came. The Ramban takes a broader view of Tanai, and he says that a Tanai is only applicable if it's in my control, I can make a number of stipulations. When it's not in my control, it makes a difference of all the stipulations. What are all the stipulations? He says, since here, let's say he makes a stipulation. If he comes to the east side should be effective. If he comes to the west side should be effective. But there's a possibility he won't come at all. Therefore, here at tonight would not be acceptable. The Mefarshim also go on to ask, then why did the Gemara make the following distinction, that we know throughout Shas that we don't hold a Breira by the Raisa, and we do hold a Breira by the Rabbanan. So Muksa is a Rabbanan. So maybe there Rabbi Yehuda will subscribe to Breira. These cases are the Raises, and that's why Rabbi Yehuda doesn't subscribe to Breira. So there are many answers Some say that Muksa, and we've said this concept previously, is considered a very serious Darabonon, and it's on the same level as a Daraisa. Others explain that here too, in the previous case, by the Truma, it was a question of a Darabonon, because it was only a question, did the Kuti take off Truma a Meiser? And now the Gemara is teaching us that Rabbi Yehuda reasoning there as well is because of Ein Breira. So we see that even by the Rabbanon, Rabbi Yehuda doesn't hold of the concept of Breira. Another teretz that the Ber Yitzchak suggests, that the reason we always make a difference between the Raisa and the Rabbanon is not that it's good by the Rabbanon, because we always could be makel by the Rabbanon. But that is only but by Muksa, which is a Dabar Sheyesh Lo Matirin, because after Shabbos it won't be Muksa. By Dabar Sheyesh Lo Matirin, we're Machmer even by the Rabbanon. And therefore, it's referring to a situation of a, even, what do you call it, even though Muksa is a Rabbanon, it's a Dabar Sheyesh Lo Matirin, and it's treated like a Daraisa. So now what's happened is, we see there be Huda does not subscribe to the concept of Breira. So we have to explain that the reason Rabbi Yehuda allows Shechita on Yontif has nothing to do with Breira. If that's the case, when it comes to meat on Shabbos, the halacha is that I'll also not consider it Muksa. So that can't be the explanation. That cannot be the opinion. That cannot be the Rabbi Yehuda of our Mishnah why the meat can't be eaten. Elam Rabbi Yosef, Rabbi Yehuda the Kalim here. It refers to Rabbi Yehuda regarding Kalim. The Tanan, the Mishnah says, Kol HaKalim Nitalim B'Shabbos, all Kalim that can be used on Shabbos that are not Muksa, Shivreim Nitalim. If they broke, they could continue being used on Shabbos. The Tanakam is opinion is, however, Vach Yosef Mei Malacha. They have to be usable, which means Shivrei Areva, if a bowl broke, if it, the shards could still be used, l'chasim and chavis, to cover a barrel, shivet chuchis, if they can be used, l'chasim and piapach. Then the halacha would be that it's muksa. As the Mefarshim point out, why does the Gemara have to say this whole long explanation of the Tanna Kamma? Because he's saying that even if it broke on Friday afternoon, in order for them not to be muksa, they have to have some sort of use on Shabbos. If they don't have any use on Shabbos, then they would be muksa. Rabbi Yehuda takes a stricter view. They not only do they have to be usable, they have to have some of the original use. Shivrei Areva, and therefore if it's a mixing bowl, it has to be usable. Lots of l'toicha mikvah, that you could pour some food into it. Shivrei Zechuchas, a broken gas bowl, has to be used lots of l'toicha shem to pour oil into it. So Yehuda's opinion is, me'ein melachtan in, only if they have some of the original purpose, if they can be used what they originally were set aside for, they are not muksa, me'ein melacha cheres loy. What is the basis of Rabbi Yehuda's opinion? Alma, kiven d'loy iskan me'es melachat melacha, if they weren't designated for this purpose from before Shabbos, asiri, hachinami, so therefore in our Mishnah as well, kiven d'loy iskan me'es melacha, since the meat wasn't prepared for this use, because obviously you're not allowed to shecht on Shabbos, it falls into the category of muksa, and that's why it's asur. Amalei Abaya, ask Abaya, how can you compare the two cases? Midami hasam, in the case of the broken utensils, mikar keli, it was originally a whole keli, v'hashdash shever keli, now it's something else. And as we've been saying, Rabbi Yehuda is a very strong believer in the concept of noilad. It's something else, and noilad is a form of muksa. Vavalei noilad v'asa. Hocha, but in the case of our Mishnah, mikar ochla, when the animal was alive, it was food. L'psoif ochel, and now as well, it's ochel. So therefore, it's no different than ochla d'afrasu. It's no different than a piece of food that became separated from a larger part of food, V'shmeil Rabbi Yehuda, and we see that Rabbi Yehuda is of the opinion that uchla the offeris shapadami, that that is not considered a situation of muksa. That's not where we see this concept. The halacha is ain't certain as a paris loitzim and mashkim. On Shabbos schita, squeezing a fruit to take out juice is also on Shabbos. It's the malacha of mefarik. The yotzma atzmam, if they came out by themselves, asurim. That if the juice came out by itself, then it's prohibited. Rabbi Yehudaimer, im la'oichlan, if the fruit was intended for food, then hayotzim and mutter. The lamashkin, but if they were intended to be used for juice, then the halacha is hayotzim and asur. So we see that according to Yehuda, on Shabbos, juice. Now, before Shabbos, it was part of the fruit. Now it's juice. But since it was part of the food before Shabbos, it's not considered noilad. Similarly, in our Mishnah, there should be no concept of noilad on the meat that's slaughtered on Shabbos because it was originally part of the animal. And now it remains so. It's not considered a new entity and won't be considered noilad. However, ask the Gemara lav et mela. Then we learn regarding that Mishnah by Schita that Amar Yehuda Mishmu Moider Yehuda Lechachamim Besali Zeisim Anovim, that if somebody has baskets of olives and grapes, even if he doesn't have those olives and grapes designated for juice, they will, if any juice oozes out on Shabbos, Kivin the Schita Kaimi, since these generally olives and grapes are generally used for pressing, Yov Daite, it's as if he set it aside, what he called, he has in mind that they're going to be used as juice, and therefore, it's also. Hachinami, therefore, asked the Gemara, in our case, Kivin L'shchita Kaimi, since the animal is generally designated to slaughter, Yov Daite, he has in mind that it's possibly going to be slaughtered, and therefore, the Gemara is asking, that just like Rabbi Yehuda says, juice that comes out of olives and grapes or Shabbos may not be used, because since generally olives and grapes are squeezed for juice, even if this person doesn't designate the olive and grapes for squeezing, the halacha is that since somebody it's likely somebody's going to squeeze them, and therefore it's usur. Same thing should be here. Since this animal is designated for eating, and the person may come to Shechter on Shabbos, the halacha is that if it is slaughtered on Shabbos, it should be Asur. Answers the Gemara, Midu Hutam El Rav. How are we trying to explain our Mishnah? We're trying to explain Rav's comment on our Mishnah. The Rav commented that our Mishnah is following Rabbi Yehuda. Says the Gemara, Hamer Rav Cholok Hayu Rabbi Yehuda. And Rav says, according to Rabbi Yehuda, Afilu B'sali Zeis V'Anovim, if you have olives and grapes that you didn't designate for squeezing, we're not concerned about Shema Yisrael. And therefore, just like Rabbi Yehuda is not concerned there about Shema Yisrael, the Rishonim explain, certainly slaughtering, which is much more of an act than squeezing, we're not going to be concerned of Shema Yisrael. And if we consider it Uchlad Ufris, it shouldn't be Noilad, and it shouldn't be Muksa. So we're still trying to figure out our Mishnah. Elamer of Sheshis Bereder of Edi, how our Mishnah reflects the opinion of Yehuda that one can eat the meat that was slaughtered on Shabbos. Yehuda the Neresi. Yehuda regarding candlesticks. The Tanya, the Brisa says, Metaltal Ner Chodesh. You can move a new lamp on Shabbos. Avloy Ner Yoshin. An old one, since it's dirty, it's Muksa Machmas Mias de Rabbi Yehuda. Since it can't be used on Shabbos, it becomes Muksa. The same regarding a live animal. Since it has no permissible use on Shabbos, he considers it muksa, and therefore even if it's slaughtered on Shabbos, it remains muksa. Ask the Gemara, aim the Shamalei Rabbi Yehuda, where did Rabbi Yehuda say that if something is designated ben shmoshes, it remains also the entire Shabbos? By that type of muksa, the muksa machmas mias, Muksa Machmas Isser. The problem with an animal on Shabbos is not Muksa Machmas Isser. It's Muksa Machmas Isser. Muksa Machmas Isser Mishamat Lei. Says the Gemara in the Tan Rabbi Yehuda Omer. Rabbi Yehuda holds. Kol Neiris is Machmas Metaltalin. You can move all types of candlesticks on Shabbos. Chutz Ben Neiris Shabbos. If you have a candlestick that was lit on Friday afternoon, So obviously moving on Shabbos involves an iser of kibui, so you can't move those candlesticks, even if they're metal candlesticks, and there's no problem muksa machmas miyas. So you see, whenever there's an iser involved, Rabbi Yehuda considers it muksa. So here too, there's an iser involved in shechting an animal, and therefore it should be considered muksa. So the Rav Demlashani Hossam, by a lamp, I put on the candlestick. So I was doich of Yadayim. And that's why it's a heavier, higher level of muksa, that it remains muksa no matter what on Shabbos, even if after the candles and the candlesticks get extinguished. Whereas in our Gemara, nobody made the animal muksa. It's muksa by itself, because you're not allowed to shecht. That is a lower level of muksa, and Rabbi Yehuda will not consider that muksa, that the halacha should be that it's usher, that if it got slaughtered on Shabbos, it should be usher. So what we're up to is, the Rav told us that according to Rabbi Yehuda, the animal that was slaughtered on Shabbos, even if our Mishnah said it's a kosher shechita, you may not eat the animal, we're still trying, even if it's a kosher, you may not eat that animal on Shabbos, we're trying to find where is the basis for that statement.